to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome to show number 67 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. On this week's show, we bring you an interview from a couple friends of ours who run a great, great podcast, the Once Upon a Time Podcast, which, based on that title, you can pretty much tell it's based on the TV show. Jimmy and Jen had a chance to talk to Colleen and Jeff Roney of the Once Upon a Time Podcast. This is a good interview. You're really going to enjoy it. So, take it away, Jen.
Welcome to the Disney Nerds. Yeah, this is Jennifer, and I have Jimmy with me tonight, and we actually have very special guests. I have Jeff and Colleen Roney from the Once Upon a Time podcast tonight. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Great. How are you?
Great. I am so excited to talk about Once Upon a Time. I actually have to say that it was Jimmy talking about it that made me want to catch up on it. So a nice little full circle here, and I can't wait to talk about it. It's an amazing show.
It is really, it was one of those shows where we started to talk about it after and while it was on the couch, and it kept on and every episode. And I said, we have to do a podcast. And so that's when the Once Upon a Time fan podcast was born.
Yeah.
Out of discussions on the couch, we would watch Lost and we would have these deep discussions about themes of the show and all. And we were doing the same thing for Once Upon a Time. And I said, We've got to do this. So,
well, that was going to be my first question. So you're already answering my questions. Thank you. So that's so cool. So you guys started then with season one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we did probably 2-3 episodes in, I think.
Gone all the way through. So it's a weekly podcast and you recap the episode, but then also kind of just themes throughout the show, right?
We do. We actually have two shows per week. One is the first thoughts that we do right after the episode airs. We sit down and we record our first thoughts about what we just saw. And then we have our main show, which is more of a listener feedback. So we have our listeners who will send emails in, email us, text us, voicemails. And we incorporate anything we might have seen the second time we watch it through. And then we'll include their feedback in that. But yeah, it is a recap. I mean, we try not to recap, you know, details too much, only because most people have theoretically already seen the show once we aired this. But we do kind of talk about, you know, where we are, what scene we're referring to, and then how that ties in with maybe other scenes in the show, because we see a lot of duplicate mirroring, so to speak, of themes throughout the, you know, the storylines. And then we'll tie it back to previous episodes, first or second even season, and we talk about what we see in the show.
That's fantastic. It's great. That's a great story how you guys came up with the show, just kind of real organically. You know, hey, we're sitting here talking about this. We should record this and put it out there. That's fantastic.
I could not do it without Colleen. There's no way. We both have strengths that help the other out, and it is really a lot of fun. Podcasting can be a lonely existence for a husband or a wife. There are a lot of podcasting widows out there that don't share the same love for podcasting, and they just kind of have to deal with it. And it is such a treat and really a great thing that I can podcast with my wife she can correct me when I say the wrong names all the time. She can give me back on track. I mean, it's really a lot of fun.
Between the two of us, I think we have a pretty broad range of experiences and knowledge about different subjects and different things, different aspects, but they're very complementary. So it does make it for, I think, an interesting, you know, show for us.
Well, just so you know, I completely understand the other side of the coin. When we were, me and Ed and Sam and Jennifer were all down there, down in Walt Disney World and for Food and Wine Festival. And while we were there and we were together, we would try and catch some audio. And anytime we did that, my wife would like hide under the table. She wanted no part of her voice on the recording. So I definitely understand the other side of that as well.
I think the one thing, as with a Disney podcast, as with a Once Upon a Time podcast, there are a lot of choices out there.
Sure.
And it's like 31 flavors. And the one thing that I really enjoy is that we really focus on the themes of the show that are relatable. And there's so many, we've got into some more, the most deep conversations about adoption, about true love, about betrayal, about choosing power over love from a television show. Right. And when we have those type of conversations and then the emails we get from people that, you know, if we make a comment, they are in that situation, and it's just, it makes it even better because we're not talking about, did you see that number in the background? Nothing against that. But these are relatable topics. There are very passionate people out there. They're really connecting with this show. So there's a lot of things going on, and it's a lot of fun. So
that's awesome. Yeah, that's a really good idea. It's a really good take on it, focusing on how these things really, like you said, are relatable to you and me and in our personal lives.
And it's such a great show to do that with because there are so many layers to it. There are things that, you know, fairy tale or Disney fans, whether, because sometimes they go with a, you know, Disney spin, or there are references to Disney fairy tales that you'll get, even hidden Mickeys now and then. And sometimes they have references to, you know, more classic fairy tales. And then there are, yeah, the deeper issues. So there's so many layers that you could watch and get out of the show.
It's written very, that show is written so smartly. I've seen, I think there was a Harry Potter reference not too long ago.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, they really tie in all of those things. Let me ask you guys, when you guys first started watching it, did the inconsistencies bother you a little bit? Kind of like the fact that Prince Charming is married to Snow White?
There were little things we kind of said, okay, at first, especially some of our listeners had a really tough time with some of the crossover inconsistencies, like that Rumpelstiltskin is also the Beast and he's also the crocodile and he's, you know, a very variety of characters. So that there were a lot of people who were just really unhappy about that. And we had to kind of think that through and remind everyone, you know, Walt Disney didn't write these stories himself.
Sure.
He was not the originator. So he actually took some liberties. So what people are getting unhappy about was the Disney,
their idea of it.
You know, they're used spin. To the Disney spin, and they were unhappy that it was changed from that. And we had to say, wait a second. Walt was an innovator. Walt was he was writing fan fiction, so to speak.
Right.
Absolutely.
For the original fairy tales, because the original fairy tales were pretty violent and not very pleasant, most of them.
Well, and you know, I mean, kind of off the topic a little bit, but with the movie Maleficent, I've seen a lot of people really freak out about it, like, oh my God, that's not Sleeping Beauty. Well, you know what? Sleeping Beauty wasn't originally written the way Walt made it either.
Exactly.
The original story was not, you know, Walt took that story and put his spin on it. So it's okay, you know? So I completely understand. But so, okay.
I actually had a hard time, not necessarily with the, like, inconsistencies with the story I was expecting, but just kind of the style, you know, different universes, so to speak, or realms, and, you know, just one story and how it connected to another. And that was just not the the typical kind of show I watched. And my husband actually very quickly compared it to like a comic book universe. So it's not necessarily the same, but because he understands that kind of writing, mm-hmm. he said that it made a lot of sense to him. And once I started thinking of it that way, then it did make more sense. You know, these characters, you know, kind of know one another on different levels and might take on different identities. And so it kind of, I guess, freed me from some of the like boundaries that I would have when I watch a typical show with one timeline and one, you know, location. And then it really, you know, kind of just allowed me to enjoy it more.
And that is a very good point. I think that is, you know, important to kind of remind yourself that this comic book would be. So that was one of the things, you know, we had to kind of remind everybody, hey guys, remember, this is not the original stuff. It's not going to be original Disney. They're going to pull elements from Disney and they're going to retell it much like Disney did with the originals. So in a sense, what Walt did for the original fairy tales, bringing them to most people's, you know, experience, a lot of people, unless you read the fairy tales, you didn't know them. And so Walt bringing them to the screen like this and bringing them to a much bigger, broader audience, I think that's what Eddie and Adam, the creators, are doing with Once Upon a Time, is they're saying, look, we're taking the elements of Walt Disney, we're taking the elements of the original stories, and we're giving them our own little spin. Because I think the way they described it when they first talked about it was they were sitting around while they were shooting Lost, because they created this idea 10 years ago. And it just took forever. They wanted to finish Lost before they started their own project. And so they kind of shelved this idea, but they said, you know, what if all the fairy tale characters that we knew were living in our world? How would they behave? Because we only know the, you know, prince and the princess meet, fall in love, get married, and they live happily ever after. What does that mean? So I love the fact that they've kind of taken all these fairy tales, they've taken the Disney movie references and the original stories, and they've kind of mishmashed that with real life and said, here's what we think might have happened if these fairy tale characters were to find themselves suddenly in our world. And it's a great fan fiction, and I think it's a fantastic little homage to what Disney himself did.
Isn't it great that a comic book fan, a Harry Potter fan, a Star Wars fan, a Disney fan, a fairy tale literature fan can watch this show, and as they all talk together, they can help each other notice what the little Easter eggs and the little twists are in there. I think that's fantastic.
Absolutely.
I agree.
I mean, there's so many layers to it. And I realized that, and I think the third episode, I said, this is deep. It's got many layers. Wow. Well, we've got to do something.
I mean, back in season one, we were looking at detail like you would not believe. In fact, just to give you a little example of the type of layers, just the names of the characters alone is mm-hmm. a huge, huge thing. If you understand anything about names, for example, Mary Margaret Blanchard. Well, Mary Margaret isn't necessarily specific to anything, although it has been rumored that that was the name of the original girl who inspired Snow White, the original fairy tale. The last name Blanchard is actually a take off the French word blanc, which is white. So you have little things like that. You've got Regina Mills. Regina is Latin for queen. And of course, Mills is the Miller's daughter, who we find out later her mother is the Miller's daughter. So you have little things like that. You have Archie Hopper. That's kind of an obvious one. Jiminy Cricket is a hopper.
Right.
So you have little funny things like that. And that was one of the things. The shield for Snow and Charming's coat of arms, it's the description. I went through major like research on it, and essentially there's little seven little white flowers on it, which are the seven dwarves over the top of the house, so they were protecting, and then Snow was in it was essentially the seven dwarves are protecting Snow and Charming in the house, in the castle, basically.
That's really
so
cool.
It was kind of, you know, that little kind of a thing. And that was just season one. And that was just the first couple of episodes we happened to notice. And there were just little tiny things here and there. But there's so many things that they have put in there, so many details that sometimes we catch it, sometimes we don't. One of the ones that I caught that, you know, lovely pop culture reference was for the hat trick with Jefferson. we talked about his name Jefferson is a little reference to Jefferson Airplane, who had the song White Rabbit.
Yeah.
Ah, nice.
Oh, that's so from the 60s. Funny.
So when you think about little, and even Dr. Whale, it took a long time to figure out what that was for, because we were thinking,
we all thought he was Monstro.
Yeah,
we
all thought
time.
Yeah, he was Pinocchio, related to Pinocchio, and turns out that Dr. Whale was named for James Whale, who was the director of Frankenstein, the 1930s movie Frankenstein.
So I mean, so they really did their research writing this.
These guys are genius. I'm telling you, they are so well read, and their research department is so fantastic that they come up with these little things, and you just go, oh my gosh, I can't believe that. Man, that's just crazy. It's amazing how, you know, Cora, the name Cora is a shortened version of Corazon, which is Spanish for heart. So, I mean, you've got these little lovely references all over the place, that just little tiny nuggets that on the surface might seem kind of whatever. But then you start digging into it, you realize, oh my gosh, it's crazy how they've even thought of these things. And, you know, the detail.
There's just a ton of character development that goes into each show.
Absolutely.
You don't get the characters just for face value. Everyone, you know, they go into their backstory, and you truly understand that character.
And I was going to say there, I was going to start down a whole other path, because I was going to say the same thing about how much I enjoyed the development of the Captain Hook character, but I want to kind of back up a little bit, just in case we have listeners. I think that most people have seen, you know, commercials or seen billboards or heard people talk about it, but if someone's not familiar with Once Upon a Time, the show, this is, I find it kind of hard to really describe, because there's so much that goes on. But Jeff and Colleen, you have a podcast. If somebody says, what is your podcast about? They say Once Upon a Time, right, and they don't know what it's about. Do you have sort of an overview that you already have that would help our listeners that haven't watched the show? Not necessarily get caught up, obviously. There's way too much to even understand. But just sort of have an overview of, you know, what is Storybrooke and who are Snow White and Prince Charming? You know, just sort of an overview?
Yeah. The picture in your mind the classic storybook characters that you've grown up with, that you've read and known and watched the Disney animated features, those characters. What if they were cursed by the evil queen and sent to our world in a town called Storybrooke? And initially, they didn't know who they were. That's what Once Upon a Time is.
That's the elevator pitch for season one.
Right.
I mean, if you really look at if you carry it further and say, you know, they initially didn't know who they were. The curse was broken by Snow and Charming's daughter.
Yeah.
And now the focus of the show is on that relationship, bringing them back together. They were separated by 28 years, bringing them back together. And now how are they dealing with all the crazy things that can happen in a family once you've reunited.
And then really side stories, about how the rest of the people in the town and in our favorite, you know, stories are dealing with remembering who they are and what happened during that time. And, all the relationships and all of the changes and things that happen in these other stories as well.
It's
pretty good.
One of the coolest things is, as Colleen mentioned, Snow and Prince Charming's daughter, Emma Swan, is the savior who will, and it has been prophesied that she will break the curse, the initial curse that was on Storybrooke. And there's a gentleman called Joseph Campbell that wrote some really interesting articles about the hero's journey. And there's these different steps in literature, in films, and television shows that really chronicle a hero who initially is tasked with this adventure and says no, but then goes through these different steps to become this hero. And I was watching season one, and I watched, and it was almost textbook steps with Emma Swan. You could see the same thing in Star Wars and that kind of a thing. But just the struggle, what if you were the savior and you were tasked with saving a town? Would you run to it? Would you? And what if your life was such that you didn't think you could do it. And a reluctant hero. I mean, it's just, it's really incredible the way they put that in. And it's relatable because it's like, you know, sometimes people say, you're going to be great at whatever. And you go, I don't think so. There's people that are better than me. And then you have to work through all that. But yeah, the initial thing is getting the curse broken. But then the rest of it is working through all the relationships. The Emma Swan felt, you know, like her parents abandoned her. But they did for the right reasons. But it's all these different things. So it's really an incredible thing. One of the ways I explain the show is, what if the camera rolled after the end of the classic animated feature from Disney? What if we saw Day One after They Live Happily Ever After? What if the Evil Queen did face her wanting to kill Snow White? What if she wrestled with that? What if she had to make amends for that? It's just those types of things. And that's what's the fun about the show.
For me, I think the bigger fun is in actually seeing that these perfect fairy tale characters, perfect prince, perfect princess, and horribly evil, evil, awful, you know, baddies, these villains and these heroes are not perfect at all. They're very flawed, and it makes them much more relatable because, I mean, growing up as a child, I can recall feeling like, okay, I'm going to meet this handsome prince, Prince Philip, of course, because Sleeping Beauty is my favorite animated feature. And I was going to meet Philip and we were going to fall in love and live happily ever after, never have any other problems ever again. And it's pretty sobering when you get to that point, when you realize, and I don't know what age I figured this out, but at some age I realized, you know what? Those fairy tales suck, man. They lied. It's not true.
About everything. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm not a princess. I'm not going to meet a prince. You know, I mean,
my it's hair just, is not always perfect.
Exactly. And birds are not going to sit and sing with me while I, you know, wander through the forest. I mean, it's just not going to happen. So for me, I love watching these characters who are, you know, you sit there and you want to hate them so much or you want to love them so much. And then they do something that like kind of turns your little hair on the back of your neck to stand up, and you kind of realize, gosh, what would I do in that situation? How would I behave? And when I, you know, especially like Rumpelstiltskin, absolutely love Rumpelstiltskin. And when he started out so evil, you're like, whoa, dude, seriously? How can you just, but then you started seeing his story and realizing that he had a noble cause, a reason for it that made him do things that were not very good, but you understood why he did it. So it kind of humanized these deified, for lack of a better word, characters, and really kind of, you know, helped me deal with and understand other people in my life that maybe have done something I didn't appreciate or whatever. Kind of going, you know, maybe I should probably take a look at what's really going on underneath this. It's really the character development, like you said, has been fantastic. And specifically for me, the one that I've just thoroughly enjoyed watching over the last 3.5 seasons is Regina, the evil queen, because you look at her and you think, God, she's evil. And the reason why she, you know, tried to kill Snow White is because she thought she was prettier than she was. That's kind of silly. And then you realize, well, maybe it's not really that, you know, maybe the storybook isn't right. And they changed the storyline in Once Upon a Time. And it's not for that reason. It's actually for an interesting reason. And then you kind of go, okay, well, so maybe she's not that bad. And she is actually redeeming herself. It's one of those things where you hate the character and now I absolutely just adore her and I want her to be happy and I want her to have what she wants. And, you know, I'm rooting for her. And it's kind of funny and odd to root for someone who's been a villain, you know? So that's one of the things I just love about the show is it gets you to really kind of look at people a little differently and realize that what you see on the surface may not be what's really going on underneath.
Yeah, I have to agree with you about Regina's, just her whole storyline, because she is, I mean, yes, Rumpelstiltskin was definitely evil, but she at some points has been the most despicable villain, which is interesting because, you know, the Evil Queen in Snow White, the animated feature, that feature is so short, the Disney animated feature, that there's not a lot of character development but for anybody. And the Evil Queen, you barely see her, and yeah. And then you learn more about Regina, and she's just awful and does these amazingly horrible things, and then you watch her slowly start to change and then slip up again, and you're kind of not sure whether you're rooting for her. And then I think at the end of season three, when she, you know, ends up getting her heart broken and you're devastated for her, you realize that, or I realized at that point, I'm like, oh my gosh, I really, really like her now. And it's just amazing how that transformation happened over time. So
I was going to ask this. Who is your favorite character on the show? Colleen?
Well, I've got a few favorites. Unfortunately, I can't just pick one. For a long time, I absolutely just lived for Rumpelstiltskin, absolutely loved him. And he's disappointed me this season. And I'm shocked, and I shouldn't be, because again, I watch season one again, and
he is Rumpelstiltskin.
He is Rumpelstiltskin. Right. But what's funny is that he actually made a statement in season one, specifically in the episode Skin Deep. So if you haven't watched it, go watch it. It's an excellent, excellent episode. And he made a statement to Belle, and I just went, oh, and now that I've watched it, now I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. I can't believe I didn't see that coming. So it's one of those things you just kind of say, yeah. I still on some level love Rumpelstiltskin, but more than anything, my favorite characters are Hook and Robin, just for a couple different reasons. I mean, not they're both very good looking actors, notwithstanding. But the fact is, I do love their characters because they love their women so much that they would do anything for them. So I really love that. But
well,
I could
say the same thing about Rumpelstiltskin too.
True.
He would almost do anything.
Almost, but again, I'm telling you, you need to go back and watch Skin Deep. Right. And when he and Belle have the conversation in her room, when he sends her away, he makes a statement, and I just went, oh, I'm crushed, because it's prophetic and it's true, and it's just, oh, kills me. But anyway, my favorite character right now has to be Regina. I absolutely love Regina, and I didn't like her season one a whole lot. I mean, I was okay with her, but I really am liking Regina and how she has come along and she's not perfect, and I love that about her, but she's trying so hard to be, you know, a better person, and I love that. I absolutely love that. So,
season one, my favorite character, period, was August W. Booth. / yeah. Pinocchio.
Good one.
He was the sage, just like Yoda, just like Obi-Wan, that would come alongside Emma and nudge her back in the right direction and really give these great deep monologues about trust and belief and faith and all these different things. And oh my gosh, just my favorite character. I also love Jefferson as well, kind of for the same way. There was a really great monologue he gave about stories,
mm-hmm.
and how they're actually true, but people don't believe they're true. And those are two of my favorite characters, August and Jefferson.
That's two good ones. Neither one are there anymore.
Now, do you have a favorite?
August is coming back.
Yeah. So they've kind of hinted to, right?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Yeah, they love to do the casting news, which is a little bit, can sometimes be a bit of a spoiler for us. But do you have favorite characters on the show?
Jennifer?
Well, as I mentioned in our pre-show conversation, I'm actually not caught up, so there might be some coming that I love even more. But I do love Hook. I love... Well, for some of the same reasons you mentioned, Colleen, but also, well, you know, he's good looking and has that like bad boy thing. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. It's kind of the same. You get to see this softer human side of a villain. I mean, he's not just mean. And then he ends up being incredibly thoughtful and incredibly romantic and not in the traditional sense. But as you said, he'll do anything for anybody. And I don't know, that he's just very adventurous and everything as well. So that character development has definitely been my favorite. I love Jennifer Morrison as an actress, so that doesn't hurt.
Right.
Yeah. So that's my favorite right now. But we'll see. I have, most of a season to catch up on. So.
Oh, you haven't started season four yet?
A little bit, but I'm waiting for my husband, which I think I'm just going to stop. I'm going to stop waiting. Because I already know half. I mean, I already know. That's why I said there's no worries about spoilers, because I already know, you know, that Frozen came and that it's actually there's this person and the other person, which we may talk about. I don't know. And, you know, because everyone starts talking about it with me because they know I like the show. So now I know about Elsa and the Snow Queen. And, you know, so I know the story, but I am excited to see it. I just,
he's not as good at binge watching as me, I guess.
Well, I'll tell you, you're in for a treat with Anna, the girl who plays Anna, Elizabeth Lail. She is amazing. Oh my gosh, amazing, amazing. Did you have a favorite character?
Mine, I think, would have to be Gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he's...
Yeah.
Not discounting anyone else on the show. I think he's probably the best actor, and maybe it just fits his style. I don't know. Maybe that character just fits him, but I think he's very believable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think he's believable to the point that he's believable, but his story, you know, seems to have so many twists and turns that I am always kind of on my guard because I never know when I'm being fooled, which is really fun.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and they've done that a lot.
And we've seen him.
Yeah.
We've seen him be the worst villain, but we've also seen him at the end of the Neverland episodes. We saw him be the hero.
Yeah. Right.
So he's just a very deep, deep character. I mean, he's probably the deepest of them all. So, and then I really like the... Charming and Snow White.
I was going to say, how could you not love them?
I think they've gotten a little, well, and I guess because they did so much character development with them, but when they did like the backstory of how they met in the Enchanted Forest and how he, you know, caught her in a net, and they were doing that. That was really cool, and it's also cool that they date in real life.
They're married. Actually.
Now. Oh, married. Yeah, okay. Married, yeah. I didn't realize they were married, but I knew they were a couple. I knew they were a couple.
Yeah, they got married in April and had a little baby right afterwards, and he's now 6-7 months old. Yeah, yeah, they're a fantastic couple, and they are really good characters. They, you know, I watched season one again, like I said, and I can remember when we were watching season one and being really disappointed in David, the character of David, because he was so wishy-washy, couldn't make up his mind, and he was constantly whining and crying and blah blah blah, and we really were frustrated with him. And, you know, I watched it again, and it's funny because it didn't strike me as the same level of frustration as we had first time. I can remember thinking, okay, yeah, it's cool because he's going to, like, totally, like, you know. Season two, when the curse was broken and he had to tell the townspeople, we are both, that whole we are both speech was massively, it was awesome. And so that kind of has stuck in my mind, even watching, you know, season one again. I'm thinking, okay, It's all good because he's gonna redeem himself.
Yeah, I think you have to remember he had to develop into that because he wasn't
a
prince.
He did.
You know, he had to learn and
exactly.
Yeah,
I wanted to tell just a quick story and then we'll jump back in. Is that I have crazy ideas a lot.
He frequently says the words, I have an idea, and I usually have to brace myself because I don't know what's coming, and sometimes it's fantastic, and sometimes I have to go, oh, you're so sweet, honey, but no.
And my dream was to go and visit where they filmed the show. And so I said, Colleen, we got to go up there. We have got to be the podcast to go up there and podcast live from the town where they filmed this show. We've got to do it. And she looked at me. She goes, Jeff, we don't have money for plane fare. Are you kidding me?
Right.
And so we got an enhanced driver's license. We drove.
Actually, no, it's not. It's passport.
It's a
passport
card. Yeah. Passport card that will allow you to drive over the border. So we drove from Southern California up to Vancouver, Canada.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
We went to Steveston, mm-hmm. where they filmed the show. Mm-hmm. We watched them set up for filming. It was amazing.
That's incredible.
We
met Josh Dallas.
We did.
Prince Charming. We took some photos. We had some time chatting with a couple of the dwarves.
Three of them, yeah.
Amazing. So much fun. Great, great guys. And we also watched Regina,
Lana
Paria, film a scene at downtown, and it was just the most incredible thing ever. Lana, it was
surreal.
A long day, and it was a long day. She was so kind, though. She couldn't stay. There must have been 75 people out there
easily,
and to get autographs and all that kind of thing. She was so kind, though. She came out and she blew kisses, and I said, thank you. And she looked back. She goes, no, thank you. And she just kind of waved and said hello. And but it was still just the most amazing trip ever. And
so cool.
That's fantastic.
It was pretty amazing. We actually filmed in the middle there's a cafe at the bottom of the Steveston Hotel. And to kind of give a little bit of backstory about Steveston, that is where it's part of Vancouver where they film. It's a little subsidiary or subdivision of suburb of Richmond, Vancouver proper. It's about 20 minutes from the airport. It's a tiny little fishing village right on the coast, and it is very quaint and very charming, and the buildings you see are actually really there. The difference is they change signage, and they have, you know, really cool things that they can quickly put up and change it to Storybrooke, but ultimately everything looks exactly the way it does in the show. The exception is the library is there's the tower, the clock tower itself is actually CGI'd. Mm-hmm. There, that doesn't exist. But
oh wow,
yeah, it's kind of funny. It doesn't exist, but the town itself, any exterior shots whenever they're outside in the middle of town, it's there. And it was pretty surreal to be in the cafe, which is at the end of the street, and it's been seen a couple times in a few of the episodes. If you really pay attention, you know where you're looking. You can actually see it. We sat in the cafe and watched them shuttle the actors to the set. So Mr. Gold's shop is probably, what is it?
Well,
maybe
we were live podcasting,
yeah, we were
at
live
that
podcasting
moment.
Yeah.
Colleen was on mic. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, so, but to give you an idea, yeah, Mr. Gold's shop is down the street. All I have to do is turn my head to the right and I can literally see it. It's probably 500 yards away, mm-hmm, if that. Mm-hmm. And the little side street that comes, that was where the cafe was on, I saw the shuttle bus. They have these little vans that take them from their trailers to the, you know, the actual set.
Sure.
And yeah, I got this turn and look kind of a thing, and I turn and looked, and there's Robert Carlyle in the back of the van.
Oh yeah, my goodness.
And he's staring at me, and I'm like having palpitations, heart attack. I'm like, I'm in love with this guy. I totally can't stand this. Oh my gosh, this is crazy. I was like dying on air, you know. And then half an hour later, somebody goes, turn and look. And I turn and look, and there he is in the front seat this time. And he's standing there. He's sitting there. He's still staring at me. I'm like, I'm going to die. I can't believe this. I'm going to die. It was quite epic. So, but we got to watch them film the scenes for part of the episode, The Doctor, season 2. We didn't know what the episode was about, but we got to see the filming of Regina was the rain, her stopping the car in the middle of the rain when she saw Daniel's ghost, mm-hmm, at the, you know, in front of the library. And they actually pulled out a rain machine and made it rain in Vancouver. Or
yeah, lightning and rain.
Lightning,
yeah,
and thunder, yeah, and rain. It was quite epic.
Oh,
and
cool.
And it was kind of interesting to, you know, kind of see that. We watched them film during the day. We watched, you know, the episode, the scenes where David just decks Dr. Whale in front of Granny's. That, yeah, was kind of fun. And the guys, the cast are really cool about coming over and visiting with the, you know, fans when they have a break. If they know they've got a few minutes, security will bring them over. They'll take pictures with you. They'll sign stuff sometimes. They'll talk with you. And they're some of them are really, really, really good about it. Some of them are a little more shy, and so it's harder to, you know, get close to some of them. But Robert Carlyle is one that will absolutely talk to the fans. Josh loves talking to fans, and Regina, Lana Perea, is fantastic about talking to her fans.
Yeah.
Emily's pretty good too, Belle. So we were very fortunate to meet the folks that we did meet and have the conversations with them. And, you know, it was a magic trip.
Yeah, that's a fantastic story. I mean, good goodness.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Is there a place like on your website or a certain episode that people should listen to hear more about that? Because that's amazing.
Yes, I will. I'll get that to you.
Yeah,
sure. We'll make sure to link that in the show notes. I mean, we'll have a lot of links to all of your information, but specifically we'll link to those, you know, episodes or pictures or things, whatever you wanted to share, because that's really cool.
Yeah, and they'll get a kick out of it. I literally have a minor heart attack while recording because Robert Carlyle swings by. But there's a shop up there, an ice cream shop. It has since unfortunately closed, but it was called Sarah's Old Fashioned Ice Cream, and you can actually see it in some of the episodes. And the lady who owned the place and ran it, her name is Katie, and she said the cast would come in all the time, and she started making custom flavors for them. And she'd ask them, what kind of flavor would you like to have? What character are they playing? And she would, you know, get their input. And she had some of the most unique flavored ice cream I've ever had in my life, and some of the best ice cream. It's really unfortunate that it closed down. But back then, and she describes some of the, in that episode, she'll describe some of the ice cream flavors she had. So it's really kind of cool that she did that.
Let me help, and we'll segue into Frozen here.
Oh, yeah.
Is that Colleen feels like there was kind of a tip of the hat to Sarah.
Yes.
And the Frozen storyline, there was an ice cream shop shown in Once Upon a Time Season 4, and it was called Any Given Sunday, spelled like the ice cream sundae.
Yeah. Right.
And the owner of the shop was named Sarah.
Aww.
So I think in some ways, maybe, they, you know, really thanked her.
Right.
Because she was on DVD extra. So.
She was, yeah. Yeah.
I bet that is exactly why it was named Sarah.
Well, and actually, Mr. Gold made a comment about, well, they did close my favorite ice cream store, or something to that effect.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So that's we think that may have been, because again, she used to cater for them as far as like she'd send over ice cream treats for them, you know, for season party wraps or whatever.
Hmm.
So just unbelievably,
nicest people in the world.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, if for no other reason, I mean, I know people would want to go just because of Once Upon a Time, but for the love of Pete, just the nicest people you'd ever want to meet up there in Steve's, just all of them, very, very kind, very polite, very accommodating, very hospitable, just a great little community. And we love supporting them in any way we can, just because it's such a great little, you know, great little place to go. And it's just perfectly lovely. You just can't go wrong visiting.
Yep.
I kind of want to.
Yeah. So that was one of the highlights of our year. That was 2 years ago. That was that was such a great trip, and it gave us a little bit of insight too into watching Once Upon a Time, because then we were able to unfortunately kind of say, oh no, that shop's not there. That's not there. That house isn't over there. That house is way, you know. So it was kind of funny to watch that and say, oh, we walked right past that. And yes, while I was there, I went to Mr. Gold's shop, which was not a shop. It had been rented out by the production company and was just an empty. People kept saying, why can't we go in the shop? There's nothing there.
On a stage, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Actually, well, now they do. They didn't used to. They actually used to film it right in there.
Oh,
so,
did they? So everything they kind of decorated the shop. But
it was full of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually full of all Mr. Gold's things in there at one point.
You would think they would only do the exterior views, like in the town, and then everything else would be shot on a soundstage.
Granny's, I know, is shot on a soundstage, the interior, but the exterior is not. It's shot out there.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, I think they may have built a replica now on stage, but I can't confirm that. But Mr. Gold's shop, they used to film inside the shop, and they filmed a ton of things inside there. And because it was, again, owned by the production company, so they ended up, I guess, giving up the lease, and some other company is in there, and it's now an actual real shop. But I did go up, and I did actually touch the door handle, because, well,
Robert
touched that handle, so of course I had to.
That's so funny.
Now it's a beautiful place, and highly recommend it. Just as a vacation spot, it's really spectacular.
So let's jump ahead, if you don't mind. Let's talk about one of the biggest shocks that reverberated through the Disney community at the end of Once Upon a Time Season 3, when there was this urn, this magical urn that came through the portal, and then the thing inside the urn poured out, and it was this bluish liquid, and then all of a sudden this female was created from this blue liquid, and then this female shot ice out of her hand
and destroyed the urn.
And it was Elsa.
For me personally, I think it was fantastic. So before we dive too much into that, let me ask you guys, are you Frozen fans? Because I think on our podcast we're split. I think me and Jennifer are probably fans, and I think Ed and Sam are not so much.
Well, I think that Sam might have been, but they're in the it's a little oversaturated camp. I have two little girls, and we still can't get enough of it. So,
yeah.
I love Frozen still, but
yeah, absolutely love Frozen. I mean, I agree that there is a point where it is a little much, and it's everywhere you look, and that's. I see the plus and I see the negative.
Well,
so, I
mean, one of the things, and just real quick, one of the things we talked about on one of our recent shows, we were talking about the, you know, kind of the oversaturation in the parks. And, you know, Disney World is kind of a different beast than Disneyland, where Disneyland is a lot more locals going there often. But Disney World, some people don't go. You know, we're like the exception. We're the ones that go twice every year or twice a year. And it does get a little old for us. But what about the kid, the little girl who hadn't been there in 2 years? And this is her first trip. So she's never seen all this stuff before. So I get it.
And I would agree with you wholeheartedly. I don't know where Sam and Ed are, if they're East Coast as well. But Disneyland, we're 6 miles from Disneyland. And it is absolutely primarily a locals park.
Sure.
And it's more compact, so everything's kind of on top of each other. It's not spread out like Walt Disney World. We have not been to Walt Disney World quite a few years, unfortunately, but it's very different here because, again, you know, annual pass holders make up a majority of the visitors that I would dare say, especially like on weekends. You get a lot of annual pass holders coming on weekends.
Sure.
And there are, you know, a number of social clubs, and they kind of have taken over the parks a little bit. And so they're constantly going, we want, you know, what we want. We don't want Frozen. We're not interested in that. And I'm like, okay, but you don't own the park. It's for everybody. Yeah. And you're going to have visitors who absolutely love Frozen. And think about the little kids who... I mean, my sister has 5 kids, and I can remember when they were really little, they would watch Toy Story or Tarzan on a continuous loop.
Over and over.
I mean, my sister would literally go crazy. She'd be watching. She's like, I've seen Toy Story 15 times today. I'm not kidding. You know, but she would say, I've seen it 5 times. I'm not joking. I've seen Toy Story 5 times today, and I'm done with it. And she'd have to hide the DVDs so the kids wouldn't, you know, because they were, you know, demanding it. So, I mean, I totally get that there are little kids who really want to see it, and they don't get tired of us. I mean, if it was such a problem, they wouldn't have needed to implement fast passes to see Anna and Elsa, because they were having ridiculous 2-3 hour lines just to see Anna.
Five.
Yes, in Disney World and Walt Disney World, probably like 5 hour wait to see
it. Oh yeah, it got up to 5 and 6 hours, and then I think people kind of went, oh, "Okay, yeah, that's a bit much." But it's insane how, you know, popular it is even now, over a year later, and it's not waning. I mean, I think it's waning with some people, but I don't think it's completely waning the way I think some of these people want it to. So yeah, no, we love Frozen. Frozen is a fantastic movie.
I love the movie. I don't know that I want to hear Let It Go one more time.
Okay.
I'm kind of over that.
Yeah.
And I know.
I love the movie. I was listening to the soundtrack regularly right after it came out. I mean, obsessively. And I haven't listened to the soundtrack in a while. So, I mean, it has its playtime. But I still love the movie.
Yeah, I agree.
I will say, do you think it was pretty... I mean, I think that it was... on one hand, maybe obvious, but on the other hand, kind of bold to bring Frozen to Once Upon a Time so quickly, because you do have people so enamored with the movie. It's so current, so fresh in their minds, and they don't follow the storyline and sing Let It Go and, you know, follow everything word for word. So did you... You know, having the connection with kind of the community, what was the general reaction from Once Upon a Time fans? Was it generally pretty positive when Frozen first came
out? No.
Wow. I was wondering, because it's the first time. Yeah. I mean, these other ones are all old, and this is the first time they're kind of wading into this territory of something that's very, very current.
Yeah. It was... The one thing I'll say is, on social media, the Once Upon a Time fandom is a passionate bunch. And when they love something, it is over the moon. And when they don't like something, it is underneath the earth all the way. Oh my gosh.
I think that's it. Sounds like Disney fans. I think that's just Disney fans in general.
Right. Now, see, for example, I'm sure you've heard, and I don't know which camp you're in, but people were beyond unhappy that Frozen is going to be replacing Maelstrom at Epcot.
Yeah, well.
Like, right. Out of control, crazy, mad.
I'm in the camp that says, let's wait and see what it is.
Thank you. That's exactly what I said.
And that it's probably going to be great.
All these people are making judgments because they removed a mediocre ride. And let's be honest, Maelstrom was mediocre. I mean, it wasn't a great ride.
No, but, and I will tell you, we've been on Maelstrom a couple of times. We went every other year for 5 years. So we went 3 times in like 5 years. And the last time was 2007. And we did ride Maelstrom, I think all 3 times we went.
Sure.
And it scared the living daylights out of me at the end with the whole being out in the open
oil
ocean.
Rig.
It just,
oh,
it
man.
Felt too realistic. Freaky. And it scared me to death. So, but I mean, that's basically all I really remember. Well, except for maybe a couple little trolls here and there.
I remember the
backwards.
Trolls trying to push us out of the thing.
Yeah. I don't really remember much about the ride other than the open ocean at the end. That just scared the crap out of me. So.
And, you know, so I think it had the as far as a ride, I think it had the popularity that it did because mm-hmm. it's one of the only rides in World Showcase.
Right, exactly.
So
exactly.
You take that ride and put it in Magic Kingdom. I don't think anybody goes on it.
Yeah, it'll be empty.
Right.
Yeah.
So because when you're in the World Showcase and you're looking to get out the sun and the heat, yeah, right. Go hop on Maelstrom. It is entertaining, but it's not like they get rid of Space Mountain or anything.
I completely agreed with you. And I said, and this is what I had to say. I finally had to say something out on social media. I had to say, look, Disney frequently forgets to jump on the bandwagon of a popular movie until it's 2-3 years late.
That's
and you're
true.
Like,
sure.
Really? Like, I mean, how long did it take?
Well, The Little Mermaid is 15 right. years late.
Thank you. And that's my point. I'm like, guys, really? You guys are upset because they're jumping on the Frozen bandwagon so quickly when normally it takes them years to do this?
Yeah.
I'm happy they're doing it now while it still is, you know, fresh and popular. And they can provide that thing that people clamor for and want right now, you know? And then I also said, and by the way, when has Disney ever been so tasteless that you just kind of don't want to ever go back to the park again? I can't imagine they're going to make it so bad that it's going to be, you know, and we kind of said the same thing about Once Upon a Time, because we heard the backlash even before the season started. We heard people going, I can't believe they're doing Frozen.
It's not a classic. It's not old enough to be a classic.
Exactly. So, and we said, wait, stop. They are going to, I'm quite confident that they're going to do the right thing with this. I can't imagine it's going to be exactly like the movie. They'll put their own spin on it. And who knows, maybe it'll actually be a better story. And lo and behold, I actually think it was a fantastic, you know, it's supposed to be 2 years after, well, the back flashbacks that we started, the whole thing that started with that storyline is 2 years after the end of the movie. So it gives us the what happened to the happily ever after. We get to see it now. So, I mean, it's a win-win, I think, but that's just me.
Absolutely.
I love the Snow Queen twist added to Frozen.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't exactly the same.
Right.
I mean, there were little bumps along the way. True. However, I enjoyed the execution of what they did. And I thought Elsa was good. I think she had a really regal, the way she portrayed the character. But Anna, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Hit it out of the park.
Oh, she was fantastic.
The best character rendition ever.
And
she was perfectly Anna.
I think, you know what was interesting? I think I liked the idea of throwing the Snow Queen in there because then that allowed Elsa to not be the villain.
Right.
Exactly. It was just all the way around. It was a really, I thought they handled it very beautifully. I loved all the references. They had so many adorable and, you know, subtle, and then some not so subtle ones, let's be honest, references to the movie. But it was, I thought it was just very tastefully and well done.
Oh, I think the guy that played,
Kristoff,
he did a fantastic job too.
Yeah.
He played that part really well.
Yeah. Oh, that is one of the things that this show is known for. And it's a blessing and a curse. They are fantastic at casting the perfect people for these roles. It's very few that I've said, oh, yeah, no, that just was not a very good character, or that was not. They've cast some amazing people in these roles. And unfortunately, because they have cast such great actors and they're not regular and they're not consistent with their parts, we lose them to things. For example, Jefferson could have done so much more with him. We lost Sebastian Stan to the Captain America franchise.
Yep.
He's busy. He's a busy guy. You know, Giancarlo Esposito, he ended up, you know, he was on Breaking Bad, but then he ended up doing Revolution. Mm-hmm. So we lost him to Revolution. Yep. And Elizabeth Mitchell wasn't even available.
She was in Revolution.
She was in Revolution as well. Yeah. So, I mean, you get these amazing actors who, and Megan Ory, we lost her to Intelligence.
Yeah.
And, now that it's canceled.
Now, see, I like Megan Ory for the same reason you guys like Captain Hook.
Yeah. Well, you and Jeff.
I wasn't gonna say anything.
But since I brought it up.
But yeah, I really enjoy season one, and Megan Ory is one of the main reasons.
Right.
Just because she's a fantastic actress, of
right.
course.
Absolutely.
That's why.
And those she's little midriff bearing outfits she wore.
Oh, well, now that you mention it, I really hadn't noticed that.
So right. while we're talking about casting, let's also bring up the great wardrobe department over at Once Upon a Time.
Oh, yeah. No, this is how much Jeff loved Megan Ory. He had what we would call little snippets in our, he had a bumper for this. Ruby Watch.
Yeah.
Every time we talked about Ruby, he had a little thing that would play.
Like Storm Watch, Traffic Watch.
That's
Ruby
funny.
Watch.
Ruby Watch.
She actually called in and left a voicemail for the podcast.
Oh, my goodness.
She did.
Yeah,
are you kidding?
That's
no.
So cool.
We've had, we've had a number of the cast members call in and leave voicemails for us. And,
this season, too.
Well, season one, it started when the dwarves started calling in.
That's right.
We got quite the little treat, and Mig Macario, who plays Bashful, is the first one. He set it up. He called in, and he not only called in himself for a single voicemail, he actually got the other dwarves, except for Grumpy, because Grumpy was filming a scene with Snow White at the time that they did it. But apparently, according to what he told me, Prince Charming was in the background while they were recording this, so you know they all were sitting there. He got the rest of the dwarves to record a Christmas greeting for our listeners.
Yeah,
season one. It's really
cool. That's so cool.
Yeah, and then we got Megan. We got August. We got August to leave a voicemail.
My favorite all voicemails was when Ian Bailey, August W. Booth called in and left a voicemail.
Yeah,
just beyond anything, so good. But we've had great luck this season as well. Beverly Elliott, Granny's called in.
Yep.
The Blue Fairy, Keegan Connor Tracy's called in. And we've also got some of the Timothy Weber, who played The Apprentice, called in. We just had Abby Ross, who played young Emma, call in. So we've had a great group of
luck. We actually had one of the best call-ins we've had was Jesse Hutch.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Jesse
Hutch
played Peter in season one, the boy that, or the man that Ruby was in love with, her boyfriend, that she ended up unfortunately killing when she was a wolf. But he called in and left the best message for us. I mean, he was really cool. It was a fantastic thing. So this season we've had 10 or 11.
Yeah, Eric Lang, who played Prince Leopold. Yeah. He was also in Lost. He called in.
Yeah.
So much fun. So
we've had some great call-ins. And I mean, we've had, Rafael
Sabarch and Tony Amendola.
Yeah.
Called in.
We had Jacob Davies and Dylan Schmidt. Young Pinocchio and young Balefire. So, I mean, we've had some really amazing voicemails from the cast, and
which means they're probably just sitting there talking about you, which is so cool.
Well, that was one of the funny things that did happen is that back in season one, Mig and some of the other Mig is Bashful. Dopey, Jeffrey Kaiser, and a couple of the other guys would sit around and listen to the podcast because, you know, it was all brand new to them. These Canadian actors, that's what's very interesting about the Canadian actors, they had no idea how huge this was going to get. They had no concept. They figured it was, whatever. It's a, you know, it's a job. And I'm like, you guys don't realize. Yeah. We kind of got to know them pretty well because, you know, they're willing to talk to us, and we're like, okay, we're happy. We'll be happy to talk to you. They didn't realize how huge this was going to get. So season one, they're listening to our podcast. And when we met Josh, you know, I just said, oh, by the way, he goes, and I said, it was lovely meeting you. And I said, by the way, my husband and I are the ones that do the podcast that Mig and the guys listen to. He goes, oh, I've heard you guys. That's great. Thanks. Keep it up. Keep doing what you're doing. I'm like, dying here. I cannot believe he just said to me that he's listened to the podcast. So, you know, these guys, they do listen to that. They do pay attention to what's actually going on out there. And it's pretty cool. But yeah, it is kind of surreal when you're like, yeah, they were just talking about us. They know who we are.
That's
fantastic.
But yeah, so Frozen, back to Frozen. Frozen, bringing it in, we thoroughly enjoyed it, like we said, and I think I can't wait for the next half of the season. I think they handled the Frozen storyline. Don't want to spoil too much because I know Jenny hasn't seen it yet. But
oh no, you're fine. You're fine.
The one thing I did want to say is the way they wrapped up
yeah.
the initial arc of the first half of season four was the most incredible wrap up
yeah.
of any quote unquote bad character I've ever seen in Once Upon a Time,
yeah.
period. It was so worthwhile. And yeah. it was just like, oh my gosh, it was just gave me goosebumps. It was just so good. So yeah. good.
Yeah. Now we love the show. We are huge fans of the show, have been from day one, but I'll tell you, there have been a couple of instances where sure. we've had a little struggle with some of the episodes.
Sure.
Season two was a dark year for us.
Yeah, it was tough.
Well,
it was a little tough.
So I think I'm a firm believer that if you're a true fan, you're a fan. That doesn't mean everything you're gonna think that and everything they do is perfect. And
exactly.
Let me tell you, you know, we have a group. We do the podcast, but then we also have a group on Disney Nerds group on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, you say anything criticizing anything that Disney does, you're probably going to get yelled at.
Yeah.
But I'm like, yeah. come on, just because I'm a fan, and we always try and take the positive approach. We don't want to just be negative to be negative, but that doesn't mean I have to agree with every decision they make.
Yeah.
We're on the same boat. We feel exactly the same way. And it's amazing how many people, I don't know if you experienced this in your situation, but we've had a number of people who have said, well, I didn't like this. I don't like how they're taking this. I don't like the fact that they're not doing the storyline I think they should be doing, so I don't want to watch anymore. And I'm thinking, what?
That's a little extreme.
It's very extreme, but unfortunately we've encountered that with, you know, some groups on social media. They're like, this is ridiculous. They're never going to do this. This is stupid. And we've actually had people we know who were hardcore fans season one, and they've kind of faded, and I don't think they watch the show anymore. And it's really kind of sad because I think it's, you know, it's not perfect. Like you said, it's absolutely not perfect. And we do take the positive approach, but at the same time, we're going to say, look, you know what? That was a really tough episode to watch. I really didn't enjoy that. Yeah. I'm sorry. You know, I'm going to, you know, I know it's going to get better, and I'm sure they had a reason. And then we actually did that this season. There was one episode yeah. we kind of went, wait, what?
Uh-huh.
Are you kidding me? Seriously?
Yeah.
No. I mean, we honestly had a tough time watching it. And then we did our first thoughts, and we watched it again later in the week, and we were kind of like, oh, I can't believe we have to watch this again. This is ridiculous. And then we watched it again, and we kind of went, okay, you know what? We'd already liked the ending the first time we saw it. We were like, okay, well, at least they did a good thing with the ending of that episode. But when we watched it again a second time, it wasn't quite as frustrating as it had been the first. And it made more sense. We kind of paid a little more attention, and we were kind of more in the open mindset. So, you know, it's that whole thing of you just kind of have to roll with it and go, okay, you know what? Like I would say, if you get a salad from a restaurant and there's one little tiny piece of brown lettuce, do you send the whole bowl back? No, you take the brown piece out, you set it aside, you eat the rest of the salad, you enjoy it.
From, you know, just from my experience watching the TV show, I've seen them do some things that made me kind of question it. But then, you know what? I've also seen it where they've done that, and then they also will kind of make a correction or give you some backstory and explain it up and explain it away. So if you just quit, though, you'd never get to that point where they rectify it or show you why.
Exactly. And right. That was exactly it. You know, this whole wrap up of season four, the first half so far, that was such a satisfying end. And we were really concerned that there was a potential for, you know, some of the other endings of season two was a really tough watch for us. Really tough. And then we were struggling with, do we continue? I mean, we wanted to do this for the long run, but we thought, okay, let's see what happens. We went to WonderCon.
Nope.
No,
D23.
They showed us a 10-minute clip from one of the episodes of season three.
The premiere.
And it wasn't even the first 10 minutes. It was actually a very specific scene in season three. And we both looked at each other and went, okay, we're back on board. We are so in for this ride because it's going to be awesome.
Adam and Eddie promised. Yeah. They said, we're not going to introduce any new characters in the first 11 episodes of season three.
Yeah.
And I looked at her and I said, we're back in. Yeah. We're back on. Because it was iffy. I mean, I was ready to just throw in the towel.
Yeah.
Was it because they were throwing too much at one time?
Yes.
They were. And I think it was this whole season two for me didn't make a whole lot of sense, but I understood. And people kept saying, well, why do you think it was so bad? And I'm like, okay, well, here's the reality of it. Season one, they didn't know they were picked up for season two until really late in the game. So they probably had an alternate ending for how they wanted to end the season.
If they were going to just end it.
If they're going to just end it, which is what they showed, which is what we saw. The curse was broken. I didn't think they were going to break the curse for at least another season, right, if not longer, because I think they could have stretched it out even further.
Sure.
I also know that they were also struggling to get the rights to Peter Pan, because Peter Pan's not a Disney property. Peter Pan is actually owned by the Great Ormond Street Hospital in London, because James Barry... his descendants willed it to the Great Ormond Street Hospital. He wrote it for the children there. And so they own the rights to it. So anybody who uses Peter Pan or any of the characters are Peter Pan is required to get permission from the Great Ormond Street Hospital. And so Walt himself had it for Disney. And while the ABC Studios has access to the library from the Walt Disney, I think that's the one exception. So they were trying to get the rights secured to use Peter Pan. They knew they wanted to do that. And so I think what happened was that while they were still trying to struggle to get the rights, they knew it was coming. They just didn't have permission to use it. I think they kind of threw a bunch of stuff together to get from the end of season one to the beginning of season three. So season two, to my way of thinking, was just a mishmash of, okay, we got to figure out how to make it happen. And I think they struggled themselves with how do we get from here to here without, you know, using what we really want to do. I don't have any confirmation. That's just my gut feeling. And so I think that's why season two was such a struggle, because I think they just kind of, it was like a melting pot of too many things that you just kind of go, wait, no, that's not believable. Not even in this storyline. Seriously, how did you? And you know, it was frustrating. It was very frustrating. So... that was my thinking on that.
What do you think is okay? Because I don't want to keep you guys all night. Although I know, I guess it's a little earlier there. But so you said that they have wrapped up the first half of season four. Mm-hmm. What do we know is coming, or what do you know is coming? What are you most looking forward to in the second half?
Well, I think it's going to be real interesting to see how they incorporate the new villains that they're bringing on for season four, second half. Which we find out at the end of season four, first half, we're going to be faced with Cruella de Vil, Ursula, and Maleficent. So it'll be real interesting. For me, I'm actually personally very excited to see Maleficent come back. I want to see what's going to happen with that.
I'm not sure how they're going to justify that yet.
Well, here's what I... here's
Did
that,
Emma
that...
Slade cut... killed right. Maleficent with the sword.
Oh, believe me.
I understand.
Believe me, we're in the same boat. We're kind of thinking. Now, the only thing I can say is I think that based on something Rumpelstiltskin said and did in season four, what we call 4A, with the whole urn, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
When he did that, the statement he made may be the only way that they can salvage how they can justify Maleficent, if that makes any sense.
Because the only thing that was down there was some kind of like a guardian of that lower area. And that could be her in another form.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I would like to see them do more with Maleficent, though, because she sort of seemed like she was going to be really important, and then she was sort of just, she never was. I mean, she was when she had to, when Emma had to fight,
right.
but as far as, like, when Regina would go see her, like, even when they fought, it seemed like we just didn't get to know her at
all. Right. Well, part of that is because Kristen Bauer von Stratton is actually, she was on True Blood. And so she wasn't able to commit to anything. And I think that because they knew that, it was kind of one of those things where I think they got her before her scenes because she had been on True Blood and I guess left it for a while. And then her character came back. So in between, she was doing Once Upon a Time. And since they knew they couldn't get her on a full-time regular basis, I think they kind of put the Maleficent stuff on the back burner. Just my guess.
But then Maleficent had a connection with Will Scarlet.
She did.
In the Once Upon a Time in Wonderland show.
Right.
And so I believe that that's another connection that they're going to be exploring as well.
Right.
So.
And now that they've brought him back, which, by the way, love that character.
Yeah, he's great.
So much.
He is fantastic.
Oh, my gosh. Did you watch Once Upon a Time in Wonderland?
I did not.
I haven't seen it, no.
Okay. Well, here's some homework for you in the hiatus. Seriously, it was actually really good. It ended very well. It ended beautifully. And his character was the best thing about that whole entire series.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it. The first power through the first four episodes because the first four episodes are a little bit tough.
Mm-hmm.
But once you power through them and you start watching every episode after that, it gets so much better. And they ended it. It was very well, very well done. So highly recommend to just, especially if for no other reason than to get caught up on the Knave character, because he is, like I said, the best part about the whole entire series.
That's good to hear. I wondered if it was just going to feel like a spinoff and feel like, you know, kind of a B-rated Once Upon a Time. So it's good to hear you guys recommend it. I'll definitely take your recommendation.
It sort of was, but the
story, as it goes forward, it really starts to kind of catch on.
Yeah, and you think Rumpelstiltskin was evil, or that Regina was evil? You have no idea until you see Jafar.
Yep.
Jafar in that, which, by the way, if you watch Lost, it was Naveen Andrews who played Syed from Lost. Unbelievably just, creepy villain. Creepy, creepy villain.
Okay, so let's talk about the end of 4A. So yes. we've got Belle finding the Dark One dagger and basically commanding Gold/Rumpel over the town line so that he's basically gone. He cannot come back right now into Storybrooke. And so we see him going to New York to find, strangely enough, Ursula,
right,
who works at this aquarium. Ha ha.
Right.
And so he says, we've got to come together and
make two more stops.
Right. So he's collecting,
before we go back to Storybrooke.
He's collecting the baddies from where they are working, wherever they are. So he's going to go get Maleficent, and then he's going to get Cruella de Vil.
Right.
To come back and rectify the situation.
My prediction is she's going to work at the pound.
Okay, yeah. Right.
Oh, that's funny.
Right. She's going to work at the pound.
If Ursula's working as a fish food dispenser at the aquarium, I'm thinking that Ursula's or Cruella's going to work at the pound.
What if Maleficent works at the museum? That's funny. that's funny.
You never know. You never know.
But the most heartbreaking thing is Regina basically sending Robin and Marion and their little son Roland over the town line. And letting that go.
Yeah.
Doing the right thing, which sometimes crushes you to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And so those two situations of people going over the line, those were huge at the end. And so we'll see what the future holds. But
Yeah, there's already a little bit of buzz about, okay, we know Ursula is the sea witch.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Maleficent is the dragon fairy. Cruella is what?
Yeah.
she has no magical powers. that we know of, mm-hmm. although I have a feeling she's going to develop some. Because we didn't know Bo Peep had powers either, so...
Right.
But she doesn't really, so, you know, right. It's just... It'll be real interesting to see how they incorporate Cruella into this. And,
I think they were calling back to classic Disney fans.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Come back. Okay, Frozen's over. We had fun. But please come back. Here's yeah. Cruella de Vil. Remember 101 Dalmatians?
Right. That?
Please come back. Oh,
well, that's in the meantime, they probably added new viewers by
right.
pushing Frozen. So, you know, they know what they're doing.
Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. I mean, you know, I know we talked about this already, but yeah, it was a really good pull on their part. And I think it did actually increase their viewership. We saw a bump in the numbers, which was really nice to see.
Yeah.
You know, viewership. We kind of pay attention to the numbers because how well the show does determines whether or not we have a show anymore. So we're kind of
sure.
paying attention to that. And it was nice to see that this season the numbers were back up to at least a good level. They had kind of declined a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so we liked the fact that they had bumped those up. We didn't really talk about season 3B, which was the Wizard of Oz stuff. I don't know if you guys wanted to talk about that a little bit. That I know a lot of people were disappointed we didn't have more Oz, and some people were disappointed we had Oz in the first place and didn't like Zelina. But
I wasn't crazy about her character. Well, about her, but...
I wouldn't mind having more Oz, but I didn't like Zelina.
Yeah. It was funny. The funny thing about Zelina, now there have been a couple of characters we've talked about, the characters we love, but there have been a couple of characters that we have not liked a whole lot. And I will tell you, my number one, I absolutely just was ecstatic first part of season 3 when she got what she deserved. Tamara.
Yeah.
Absolutely could not stand Tamara. I wanted her gone. Yeah. Like, you do not even know. I was like, kill that woman right now. She needs to die. She was horrible. And then Zelina, I didn't want her dead. I just wanted her to be redeemed. And I was kind of mad about her whole reasoning for everything. Because she didn't seem to have what I would call, like, Rumpel being evil, again, he had a noble cause, trying to find his son, you know, mm-hmm. trying to, you know, make things better for his son and for the townspeople.
Right.
But Zelina didn't have a good reason to be a villain. Regina had a pretty good reason for being a villain because based on what she thought she understood and knew. And then when she...
And you watched her being redeemed,
exactly.
at least the process of it.
Exactly. Yeah. So when, you know, and Hook kind of, you know, I mean, he's a villain, but being redeemed to the point where, and he had a really good reason too, technically, for being as bad as he was. So, I mean, they had rational reasons. Zelina didn't have one.
Yeah.
And she had no redemption.
No.
Right.
She didn't.
They just killed her off.
Exactly. Yeah. It was so abrupt. Well, we think he killed her off. We don't know what really happened.
Yeah.
I mean... They could resurrect that somehow. Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed the Neverland storyline mm-hmm. because we really did get to look at was really fascinating mm-hmm. to me.
Yeah.
The whole Echo Cave telling a secret that you've never said before. And the ripples and repercussions of that. I just thought it was fascinating.
Yeah,
and it did
yeah.
challenge all those kind of notions of, is a pirate always a pirate? Can you change? Or
mm-hmm.
so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Peter Pan, that's another one.
Yeah.
He was another little evil villain that was just, he had such a horrible reason for being the way he was. But it was easier to forgive, I think, a little bit, only because Robbie Kay, the actor who portrayed him, was ridiculously
fantastic.
Good.
Yeah.
Unbelievably
yeah.
good. So
yeah,
believable.
Yeah.
So just, yeah, he was a villain and you knew he was a villain and you wanted to hate him. But then you were like, but he's just an innocent boy. And he's really, but he really wasn't. It was just, it was, yeah. Season 3 was a really good season.
Yeah, I agree.
And that was just interesting with Peter Pan being, and he was a very believable, creepy villain. Like that whole season was good.
Oh, it was. And I will tell you that, you know, that was one of the things everybody loved Robbie Kay, thought he was fantastic. And part of the reason he was so good at being a villain was he was so manipulative. Compare that with Zelina, who was in your face villainous. I mean,
right.
she wasn't like,
no
she
finesse.
Wasn't subtle about, yeah, she was not subtle in any way, shape or form. And that's the thing that, you know, I think I appreciate, especially about Snow Queen, is that she was so very subtle. And so manipulative, but she wasn't being vicious. she was telling the truth. She was very truthful about everything she said. She didn't lie about anything. And yet it sounded like she was lying because of how she delivered. So it just, you know, that was another villain. I was like, oh, come on, I want the redemption. And it was a very satisfying end. I will say that. So it was so spectacular.
Definitely looking where, like, all the shows we watch right now are kind of in break. So
right. It is the season for that. They tend to do that, which is kind of nice. And I remember what season one and even season two, they didn't really take too much break during Christmas, and it was all over the place. It was hard to, you know, oh wait, we have two weeks on, and then 3 weeks we don't have a show, and then two more weeks, yeah. And then it was really hard. And they realized that was kind of a pain, and so they decided to do, you know, 11 weeks straight, and then have the Christmas break, and then come back at the, you know, beginning of the new year, or well, actually, March 1st. We have
that's a long time.
I know. 3.5 months to wait. 3.5 months. We did it before. We'll do it again.
Yeah, really.
So where can our listeners find you?
Well, we can find us at onceuponatimepodcast.com. On Twitter, they can find us at OUAT Podcast. Mm-hmm. And on Facebook, it's facebook.com/OUAT Podcast.
Guys, we appreciate you guys coming on and talking to us about the show and your podcast. One final question.
Sure.
And I ask this of all my guests on the show. What makes Jeff and Colleen Roney a Disney nerd?
Oh. He and I had our first date at Disneyland. Nice. And he proposed at Disneyland.
Oh, sweet.
We have our own little proposal table at French Market.
You right go next visit?
We do. We walk by and we always go, oh, there's our special table.
That's
and
awesome.
It reminds us of our, you know, the engagement. And had it not been so expensive, we probably would have gotten married there.
Yeah.
Or it's the ground.
Yeah, it's ridiculously expensive.
It's pretty expensive. So that I think is what makes us the Disney nerds. We've gone to Disneyland for the highs and the lows of our life. And, it's just, we love it. We enjoy it.
I think the thing that makes me a Disney nerd is that I find my childhood there, mm-hmm. because I was there as a kid. And it's like you revisit who you were as a kid, and you remember that things are new and things are fun, and that you laugh, and that the tough things that are going on in the real world, is that sometimes you can remember what it was like when things were new and fun, and having a helium balloon was a big deal. And mm-hmm. you watch kids kind of just big eyes at the fireworks, and you know, the world can make you cynical, but Disneyland has a magical way. Disney parks have a magical way of reminding you that anything is possible, dream big, and that don't lose that little kid inside of you. You can, but you can find it again. So
yep,
I 100% agree.
That's right. I love that.
Thank you guys so much for having us on. It's been a
thank
pleasure.
You we appreciate you. Guys, you guys do all the stuff to keep us up on what's going on the other coast.
Yeah,
we need you guys, and we thank you for what you guys do.
Well, we hope we hope you can make it down to Walt Disney World again. If your last trip was, you said 2007?
Yeah. January of 2007.
Yeah, we'll be saving our nickels and dimes, and we'll let you know.
Yes. I know it's hard. It's far away, isn't it? Yeah. Like we want to get to California again, but it's a big country. So, it's been a pleasure talking to you guys. I think I'm going to have to just catch up without him. Or Kyle, if you're listening, you better get caught up soon. And then you have a new faithful listener. I cannot wait to, when it comes back in a few months, be caught up and start chatting with you guys again about the show.
Excellent.
Fantastic. And if anyone really wants to start at the beginning, have no fear. They can go to onceuponatimepodcast.com/OUAT start.
Nice.
That is going to give you, not too spoilery, but an introduction to the characters, to the places, to the little Easter eggs that you're going to find when you start watching the episodes. One of the listeners wrote it fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic start. So
that kind of seems like something I want to check out, just, you know, to see what I noticed and what I missed and what I'm going to see going forward. So I'm going to check that out myself.
Brad Pogris, just fantastic. He does our voice of Rumpelstiltskin on our podcast,
which is fantastic, by the way.
He is.
Oh, literally, when I think that, did he do a bumper for us?
He did. Yeah, we did it.
Maybe. Well, as soon as I heard that, I was like, who did that? And actually, Jeff, I think you got the credit. But either way, it was amazing. So pass that along for us. It was wonderful.
I will. Brad is just fantastic. And we've had really a lot of great luck. You know, podcasting is kind of like a title fight. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. And but we've had some really, really great luck. And Brad is just fantastic. He mixed together a little audio clip with all kinds of different things. I mean, it's incredible what this guy
can
do.
He's very talented.
But anyway, so.
Well, again, very thank cool. you guys so much. And we'll definitely have to do this maybe midway through the next, you know, the next little season.
Sounds
Absolutely.
Good.
Thank you so much for asking us. We really appreciate it.
All right, guys.
Have a great night.
Well, that's it for show number 67. Thanks again, Colleen and Jeff. Really great interview. Really appreciate you coming on the show with us. For those listening, if you want to get in touch with the show, please send us an email at thedisneynerds@yahoo.com. Or you could touch base with us on Facebook. We have the Disney Nerds Facebook group, and we also have the Disney Nerds podcast page. Also, stop by our website, thedisneynerdspodcast.com, for all of our past shows and show notes. Thanks again for listening, guys. This is Ed, and we'll talk to you later. Kungaloosh!